Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. We apologise for the delay in starting, but we will have a full programme. My guest tonight for me in the UK is Bethany Elion, and she has just issued a book, Memoirs of the Bathtub Psychic, which is her true story as a clairvoyant of herself and her dogs. So welcome to the program, Bethany. Thank you for hanging on for us.
Thank you for having me. It's Beth Ann.
Beth Ann, is it? Oh, right. Okay. I wasn't sure about that.
Okay.
Just get these unusual pronunciations. Now,
yeah.
As a psychic, no doubt you were aware that you would be late getting onto the program, I take it.
No, I don't know everything. I wish I did, but it doesn't quite work that way.
Oh, right, okay. I was only joking, really, but
okay.
It would have been quite a surprise if you had said yes, you did.
Nevertheless. I've done enough radio shows that nothing surprises me. It's like, well, they're a little late in calling, so I'm sure they'll call me soon.
That's right. Well, that's great. Now, we're obviously going to talk some length about your book, which is about your relationship with your Newfoundland dogs, Sophie, Emma, and Cubby, who you call the Barking Bears, which taught you to trust your natural psychic ability, which led to your discovery of your talent for animal communication and healing. So we'll be pleased to hear about that. But I think we ought to start really at the beginning, where it all started to happen for you, because it surprised me reading your story that this really started when you were 3 years old, when you had out-of-the-body experiences. So for mine and our listeners' benefit, tell us a bit about those early days, how you coped with it.
It actually was my first memory, was going out-of-body and feeling inside this gentleman who was doing our sofa, redoing the sofa, putting on a new cover. And what I experienced from him was an incredible loss. His daughter had passed away not that long before, and I was her age, so he felt very sentimental towards me, and, you know, therefore there was a connection, and I think that's really why I connected with him so much. In feeling that, I could feel physical attributes along with what I was perceiving that he had gone through, and it seemed perfectly normal to me. That was everyday life, perceiving what people did, what their feelings were, their emotions. And it was more of a surprise realizing that other people didn't react that way to other people. They didn't perceive life the way I did. That was a little shocking.
I mean, I found it surprising that you were looking through his eyes. And you could see your own body sitting on the hearth where you'd left it. I love the idea of just sort of leaving your body lying around. And you had a strong sense of his physical nature to the point that you knew he had a bruise on his forearm, a stiffness in his leg. I mean, even the mosquito bite on the back of his neck. I think that is absolutely astonishing. But even so, you were a young child and you thought this was natural. Were you not at all sort of surprised at the extent of the knowledge that you could gain being in someone's body?
Again, it felt normal, but I think it was the precursor to my becoming very involved in nutritional healing and understanding how a body works. It's become kind of an obsession as well as a passion with healing and homeopathy and herbs. And a lot of that relates to my being able to read a dog so well or to feel their emotions. I had an experience about a month ago. I'm an hour from anywhere. I live in rural Vermont, so it's an hour to go to the co-op to buy supplies. I was headed up there, and it's been very, you know, snowy and cold here, and it's a two-lane road to go an hour. On the way there, I felt my guides, like, surrounding me, like, oh, you poor thing, is what it was feeling like. I couldn't quite understand, and they know me well enough to know that if an animal is in crisis or something happens like that, I take it very personally. I get very, very involved and very upset, especially with puppies or kittens. After marketing, I get into the car and I'm hearing what sounds like my Labrador screaming. And it, you know, this is in my third eye or third ear, so to say. And I started to panic thinking something was wrong with my dog and it was going to take me an hour to get home. And I quieted myself to really hear, and I could see that my dogs were sound asleep at home. So I wasn't sure who it was. Driving home, unfortunately, I found out there had been a yellow lab puppy that had been hit and was lying in the road and no one was stopping. And it was not a situation where you could stop and be safe. And after panicking, I realized that the dog spirit was sitting right there. And the purpose of my feeling that and seeing it and going through was to help the dog cross over. So the dog wasn't quite sure what I wanted. I ended up throwing a stick into the light and the dog crossed over that way. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, that was a wonderful thought. I'm sure our guests will be interested to know that when you discern these images, you see them, you say, like still life photos or motion pictures within the mind.
Yes. Yes. When I get in the tub, I find it's a great vehicle for being able to get what I call the full DVD high-def version of what's happening. It gives me a place to really focus. I spent years, once I felt detached and had issues with my abilities, I spent years trying to avoid them. And so to plug back in, I often get in the tub to get that kind of clarity and to be able to see longer images. And it creates a better validation. It creates more certainty in what I'm seeing and how to
right.
head forward.
You must be unique in that respect, because I was going to ask you what the truth about the bathtub was, but I imagine if you're in a hurry, you don't bother to put the water in.
No. That's very funny.
You sort of do a bit of dry psychic work.
Dry psychic, yeah.
Do you think, nevertheless, being serious here, that there is something about the water that you're in that helps the sort of your psychic ability?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's got energy in it, hasn't it?
Well, somebody told me, who is much more scientific than I, that it has to do with negative ions. And that's why a lot of psychics like to be by water, that there is a relation with getting in water, being next to water, that triggers the psychic ability.
Yes. I thought that may well be the case. Now, getting back to this experience that you had with the upholsterer, you mentioned that in, I guess, sort of the fraction of a second, you said as though someone had snapped their fingers, you found yourself back inside your body. Now, does that mean that you can't at any time control how long you are out of the body, or you can't stop yourself going back in? I mean, are you in control of it?
I am now. There were, that's an interesting question. I really didn't understand all of that until not that long ago, several years ago, when a friend of mine was over here. I live in a fixer-upper house, and I'm not that good at fixing, and she comes over and helps me with some of the restoration. She had been outside caulking and came in to ask me a question. I had a root beer in my hand at the time, and she's shaking the caulk, and I was mesmerized watching her shake the caulk. I suddenly found myself flip into her, seeing from her, and my body, I was shaking my root beer like she was shaking the caulk. It was just a split second. And she, who is also very psychic, very intuitive, felt quite violated. And it was a wake-up call for me to really get a handle on this, because it's invasive and it's not okay to just be jumping around like that. I needed to learn how to control it and how to stop just jumping in places where I wasn't invited. And at that point, I started asking permission.
Right. Because you know, I guess you were still quite young when you used to find your curiosity was only satisfied by getting inside of people. And I'm thinking of the time when you saw the cotton candy man at the carnival, and you saw a lawyer in an expensive suit who was planning his closing remarks for a trial. And I suppose you were interested. I mean, it's just sheer curiosity, wasn't it? Were you still a very young child then?
Yes, that was over a period of time. It started to switch in about third grade, because that's when negative experiences started to happen. And but I think because maybe it's my personality type, sensitive to other people, very sensitive to other people, and I feel inquisitive, or somebody doesn't feel happy or is hurting in some way, it just evokes me to pay attention. And in those days especially, it meant that I was out of control, jumping in to see what it was.
Yes.
The naughty child.
Now, you've been in evidently quite a few bodies by now. we other mortals who do not have your psychic ability are only familiar with our own. Now, do you find there's a vast difference between how people's bodies feel?
I'm really not as in tune with people as I am with animals. I do it with people, but I think it's, at the risk of sounding rude, I just don't care as much with the people as I do with the animals. Yes, I'm always amazed, though, at how things feel differently with different people. But it's more, how do I put this? I think my viewing has changed, where it's more at an etheric level, where I'm more an observer and not judging it and not not living it with them. It's more like, oh, this is happening and that's happening, and I understand that. Like, almost like taking an inventory.
Yes. I mean, as a child again, or a younger person, you as you said, didn't feel that you had to get permission. You just entered bodies when it took your fancy. But did you ever find someone had some sort of protection and you couldn't do it?
That's interesting. I never really was in that position. It was more that I found myself in there. I never looked at somebody and went, oh, I need to find out what's with them. It more or less just happened, and I was along for the ride, if that makes sense.
Yes, indeed. Now, on those occasions that you've been out of the body, have you ever seen any other spirits with you, or
yes.
Have you noticed? Oh, you have?
Yes. I found it quite shocking. There was, I think I wrote about it in the book, with one instance where I was looking for a lost cat, and I was standing outside somebody's this home, and there was a workshop and a garage and this lovely house, and there on the driveway was this fellow who looked like he was a Canadian Mountie, but old, like he had, it was from a time before, and it took me by surprise. Things like that always take me by surprise. I'm very easy to startle. But it took a bit to realize that he was another traveler. He was just passing through. He did have a relation to these people in some way that I don't know, but he was doing what I was doing.
Well, I must say it makes sense. I would have found it hard to believe that you didn't ever see anyone, but I was just curious to know the circumstances in which it did occur. Now, do you think that, since everybody seems to be open to having spirits in their body, do you think that when a lower entity perhaps enters the body, that is how possession takes place, and the people perhaps are even unaware of what is happening?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've gone through experiences myself with negative energies and not realizing what was happening to me and needing to seek professional help to basically get a clearing. people more or less putting the whammy on you, as they say here. I've experienced things like that, and it's good. I'm glad I have, because I know now what things like that feel like, and what it does to you and how exhausting it is.
Yes. Now, your mother evidently became curious about your psychic abilities. You seem to indicate that she had some awareness of what was happening. What was the facts about that? Did she really know?
My mother is very much an extrovert, and I'm an introvert. And whenever something happened or she would observe something, she would go to town with it. There was a fellow I accidentally let it spill out that he was a doctor, and she had to go running over to find out. And that's my mother. She's still like that at 84 years old. Once she grabbed onto that, she wouldn't let it go. And she's, well, what does he do? And what do you see in that person? And she finally got tired of it, because I would avoid the questions or not answer. Say, I have no idea. And she'd let it go and move on to something else. I have three older brothers, and I more or less would go off on my own as a child. My mother was a cooking teacher and had a teaching kitchen in our home and was very busy with her students. So it was easy for me to escape to the park behind her house or do things more with the animals than with people.
So. Yes, indeed. Right. I believe there was another occasion when you had an interesting experience with your mother when you were out to dinner, or are we talking about, have you just spoken about the same incident?
Yeah, with the doctor. He was a cardiologist.
That was one and the same. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
How do these bits of information come to you? Is it like a thought, or is it always accompanied by some sort of picture?
It's different every time. I sometimes see images. Sometimes it's like something that pops into your head, but it feels different than a thought. A thought feels more like a process, as opposed to just being there, like it just pops in. And other times it's a feeling. It comes differently with every situation. I never know what I'm going to get. It's always a surprise.
Right. I'm a little surprised that when you enter people, that you also know the secrets that they are harboring. Did you not feel a little bit uneasy about that?
It was more so when I was younger with that. I think because I've directed it more and I don't pay attention to that sort of thing anymore. It is an intrusion. It would be sort of like going into somebody's house you don't know and parking yourself in their bedroom and opening the drawer and pulling out their diary and reading and asking for a glass of milk while you finish. It's really no different. And I think over time I've managed to just block things like that, so it doesn't even come through.
That's all right, carry on. Yeah.
I actually just recently went through about a 2.5-year period where I felt very alienated from my own abilities. It was a lot of stress and financial stress and business and my house falling apart that I actually felt very removed from my abilities. And I think, you know, coming back and feeling more secure with who I am and what I do now has given me a different perspective on it from actually walking away once again from the things that I can do. And
right.
Privacy is huge. It's just huge. It's sort of uncharted territory. I know a lot of people who are just coming into their abilities. We're all psychic to some extent. And a lot of people find themselves falling into it in their 20s or 30s. And I see them more or less practicing on anybody and everything and anybody's animal they'll talk to, without taking into account that there is a code of ethics here.
How do you know about that?
How do I know about the code of ethics?
Yes.
By blundering and screwing it up.
Okay.
By making a mess of everything. Isn't that the best way to learn?
Being visited by someone and being given a lesson. Now, your boyfriends must have been very pleased to know that you couldn't always tell what their secrets were, then.
They come and go.
I think you have some secrets there now. Anyway,
oh, we all do,
so
right?
are you really now more likely to be called a clairvoyant in the sense that you can pick up information from people without entering their bodies?
Yeah, I don't necessarily enter in like I describe. No. It is more like a checklist of information, or I'll get a feeling on something. I don't necessarily have to go in. Sometimes I'm drawn in unexpectedly in a situation, especially with lost animals. Then I want to be in. I want to see through their eyes if they'll let me. It's extremely helpful to find out if they're okay, if they're alive, if you know where they are, if they want to be found, that sort of thing.
Right. Now, you had at one time, I guess looking back, you call it an unpleasant experience when you were in the playground and you saw this young girl on the slide. I don't know how much you would care to tell us about it, but it is in your book.
Yes. It was third grade. That's when things did start to take a change. And I normally spent my entire recess with my then little boyfriend, my first love, and he was off at the dentist that day, and I was on my own, and I felt this pull towards the other side of the playground, and it did not feel like anything I understood, and it was the new girl. It was her first day, actually, in school, and she was at the top of the slide, and I had gone over, and I was looking up, and I wasn't looking up her dress like the kids were making fun of me. I bet Anne's looking up your dress. I was drawn to looking at her because I saw this black energy around her that I now, as an adult, understand was sexual abuse energy. And the images I saw were really not for a third grader. You know, I could feel that there was some horrible man abusing this woman. And it scared the daylights out of me. I didn't know what to make of it. It was extremely frightening. And when you're in a position of, especially, I mean, I was born in 1956. And in that time frame, when I was in third grade, who do you talk to about something like that?
Yes.
There wasn't anybody in my life that, you know, we have, here in the U.S., we have this show, Psychic Kids, Children of the Paranormal, with Chip Coffey. Don't know if you're aware of the show where he helps children come to terms with their psychic abilities. We didn't have somebody like that then. So it was enormously frightening, and it was the first negative experience I had. Where do you go with something like that?
Yes. I suppose at best it did perhaps make you feel or work a lot more cautiously perhaps than you might have done, because you obviously wouldn't have liked to had to confront that type of situation again.
No. No. Never wanted to.
Right. Now, I'd like to move on to when you were 16 and you took riding classes on Saturdays at the local stable, and you used to stay behind and help them groom the animals. And I'm guessing, I don't know if that was the first occasion, but you stood with your hands on the horses' necks, feeling the electricity of their thinking. Tell us a little bit more about that. And was it your first experience with a horse?
No. Actually, at that age, that's all I ever wanted. I wanted to just be around horses the rest of my life at that point. And I found great comfort in being with animals. And I think in retrospect, it's because they don't judge. They accept you for who you are. They understand your ability to hear and see because they're telepathic, too. And it was just a very safe, wonderful place to be. So, yes, my days going to the stable were incredible. Loved going, loved just having a hand on a horse and feeling. And also it became sort of like, well, he feels like this, but I feel like that, and understanding the different organs of the body and putting it all in perspective. Those were the best moments of my teen years, actually.
All right. And then you had another experience when you were in class, trotting around the ring, and you watched other girls on their mounts, and in your head you said you heard or felt how the horses reacted to the experience.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very interesting, that they actually have, as you like, an opinion about it.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't you have an opinion if someone was riding you incorrectly?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
It would hurt. Somebody's sitting too far back in the saddle, you know, you're sitting back on the kidneys. Yes, yeah, it's, and you would have thought, especially looking back now in my 50s, that I would have had a greater respect and would have been more protective of that when the riding instructor told me to do things I didn't want to do and the horse didn't want to do. And I didn't listen to the horse, I listened to the instructor and ended up getting thrown and the horse fell on top of me.
You're talking about Walker, of course, aren't you?
Walker, yes.
Horse.
Yeah, he was not well. He had kidney problems and I had not ridden him before. I'd always ridden another horse that was there. And this was a new instructor and I didn't like him. I didn't like anything about him. He gave me the creeps. And I used to see him watching me around the stable, and it just gave me a horrible feeling. He told me to get in line with everybody else when I said, this horse does not want to be ridden. There's something wrong with him. His kidneys, you know, there's something wrong with his kidneys. And he gave me that look that I have seen many times since. Well, how would you know that? You know, what makes you the expert on the subject? That sort of look. And at 16, I did not stand up for what I knew to be true, and I did not stand up for the horse, and ended up getting quite, you know, quite winded and felt like quite the fool. And it was a turning point as far as walking away from my abilities and the point where I started drinking a lot of wine and smoking a lot of pot.
Oh, dear. You went off the rails a bit.
I did. I did. But, you know, you find, and it's very interesting in doing interviews with other psychics that I'm finding how many of us did the same thing of dulling our senses with drugs and alcohol. It was a way to get away from that part of us that we couldn't incorporate into our lives.
Right. Now, what is this peculiar incident that enters your story, still to do with Walker? When you looked down at Walker's neck, you said, and you took your hand and you touched him there and you heard him words from the universe, do you listen to him? You, Walker's, choose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you think that was? Was that your spirit guide?
I often don't know if it's spirit guides. I have many. Or I'm just hearing the words in general from the universe. I believe sometimes it's almost like a collective voice. There were days I would be afraid to say that from getting put in a straitjacket. it's not necessarily from my guides. I hear it as almost like a universal voice. So I don't know how else to describe it. Maybe it's the man behind the curtain.
Some people go along with the idea, which I do in fact, that we have a higher self, which is, shall we say, our super conscious self, who probably relates to us in that way. So could it possibly be just your higher self?
It could be. I think it can be many things. I think it can be that. I think it can be guides. I think there is something even greater than that. That, you know, bigger, that is beyond my comprehension. I find it different in every circumstance. Again, different.
Yeah. Now, you spoke telepathically with the horse, Walker. Was that one of the first occasions that you were communicating in that way? Or had you always done that?
No. It had always been that way. We had a German Shepherd that I used to do that with all the time. He was not a well dog, and he used to sneak into my room at night and stay next to my bed until the first light, and then he'd go back to his spot because he wasn't supposed to be in that part of the house. But no, it was normal for me. I felt much more comfortable around animals, as I said. So yeah, I could hear them. And I thought that was normal. I thought anybody could.
Yes.
It was quite a surprise to find out. Huh?
Yeah, I guess you would. I think when we all look back to our childhood, we believe that we ourselves and our family probably were the same as everybody else's, when of course they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you left school and you went into some sort of makeup course, which was quite a deviation. I suppose that kept you busy, but you actually had an interesting experience with your first appointment. Tell us about that.
Oh, the worm lady, yes. And it's funny, to this day, I do have a keen radar for parasites in people. And it was a very foolish idea to think going for my aesthetics license, which is makeup and skincare, would be an appropriate career for a woman who, when I touch people, get a stronger sense of them. And even in my school situation going, people didn't like to work on me because I was so hypersensitive to the touch, and I would start saying things about them, and it would give them the creeps. So I had taken a job on in a salon on Newbury Street, which at the time was a very prestigious area. And my first client sits down, and I'm starting to work on her, and it was almost like electric shock feeling in her skin. There was something about her, and it felt so creepy crawly that it almost sent me flying back like I had been electrocuted in the chair, in my etheric self. And what I was feeling were all the little parasite entities in her body. She was infested with parasites. And it was terrible. It was not a good experience. After working with dogs for so many years now, it's something I'm used to seeing. It doesn't faze me in the same way. But that was the first time I'd ever really taken in a parasite load. And where do you go with that? You know, what do you say to them?
Yes.
Yeah. And then,
having found the ability, if you like, to diagnose those type of conditions, is it also given to you to know how to treat it?
Diagnose is a tricky word, and I always tell people when I'm working with them, I don't diagnose and I don't prescribe.
Right.
However, I will make suggestions of maybe you should get tested for parasites. And as far as people go, I explain something that in regards to our health, that we don't seem to address the parasite issue like we used to, and that it's important to do a cleansing twice a year, that we all have them, it's normal, and there are ways to treat that, and it's something I do for myself and my dogs twice a year. We all do black walnut, clove, and wormwood, which those three things will get parasites at their different stages. And my dogs get Chinese herbs for that also.
So am I guessing right here that one has to be careful because you have useful parasites and also useless ones?
Yes. Yes. And I'm finding more so than ever, especially in the past 2 years, of people and their pets being just infiltrated with, candida, for one, you're talking about good and bad entities in the body, but the number of parasites, the parasite loads are increasing. So,
is that necessarily to do with people that eat flesh?
No. Not necessarily. Oh, great. Now I'm getting pictures of it. It's anywhere. It's anything. It's even just touching your hands. It can be on your body. It can be on a pet. It can be anything and anywhere that you take in. I do think that there is a worse incident from animals that, if you're eating animals that have been mistreated and not raised correctly, you will have a higher incident of issue. Both, you know, consequence from eating such a poor meat to what they're infested with and how they've been handled. Yes. But in my little quiet world here with, we are carnivores in this house. Grass-fed meat only that's been treated, and I know every animal that goes into my freezer. Every single one of them. Known them personally.
Right. Now, you have worked or do work as a nutrition consultant. Are you into sort of vegetarianism and that type of things?
For myself? No.
I
have a great respect for people's need to do that. If it's, I do believe it's very philosophical. It's very much a choice. It's not something I struggle with it because I have a sense of the animals that I take in, that I ingest. And there are times I can't. There are times where I'll go days without eating meat because I'll have, you know, had some images I just can't cope with. But for me, it's part of the balance. And I deal with dairy farmers. One of my closest friends is a dairy farmer. And the things that, you know, we cope with on a daily basis, you get to have a sense of the circle of life, if I can coin that phrase here and recoin it, in sense of what they're here for and why we need them in our lives, in our diet, that sort of thing.
Right.
Am I making any sense?
Yeah, you speak of whole health balancing products for dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably we can do something for humans in the same way. But what in general terms is the best sort of foods to feed a dog on to keep it healthy?
I'm sorry, for some reason you broke up a little bit.
Right. I'll repeat the question. I'm asking you what particular foods you recommend to keep your dogs healthy.
Balanced diet would include meats. I find that most of the dogs that I end up working with do best on beef, though there are some that do well on chicken or turkey. Having their balance of bone and meat, that they're getting their phosphorus and calcium and magnesium that way. Some vegetable matter, and I know grains are controversial, but I do feed my dogs some grains. They get a cereal meal with raw milk or yogurt, molasses and oils and vitamins. It's the way I feed my dogs is based on the work of Juliet Levy, who really was the trailblazer of holistic veterinary medicine. And she took the information from gypsies and travelers and people who lived very close to the land and had been feeding their animals this way for hundreds and hundreds of years. And it worked. It worked.
So what is your view about raw food for animals?
That's what my animals get. My dogs have been getting raw meat for 15, 20 years now, is it? I've lost track of time. Ever since I ran into Wendy Volhart, who took Juliet Levy's work and brought it to the next level, kind of brought it into the century, because we don't exactly hang meat from trees anymore. We have refrigeration and that sort of thing. And they've been thriving. Yesterday I had to go to a photo shoot down in Massachusetts, and it's about a 3-hour trip from here. And the woman that I was visiting has you know, a house full of dogs and cats. And I had my dogs with me, and she was quite taken with the fact that my Labrador is 3 years old. And she was insistent that the dog had to be under a year. She looked so puppy-like and so vibrant and young. And she kept referring to her dogs as, you know, very healthy looking and vibrant. And they were kibble-fed dogs. There was a golden retriever whose face was already white at a very young age and was quite stiff. And all the dogs were telling me that their physical ages were nearly twice what their actual chronological age was. And it's because they didn't get the nutrition they needed from the food they were getting. It's refined food. It's dead food they were getting.
Yes. I haven't any animals now, but at one time my wife and I had 3 cats. We're actually cat people.
Yeah.
And we used to feed them on processed foods that you buy in the tin, but I'm quite convinced that it's of such a poor quality, in the end we had to have all three put down, obviously at separate times, because of diseases that they caught. I'm not asking you to condemn all type of tin foods, but would you hold a similar view?
I do. I am not for refined food. It's a fine line, because some people feel they need to, that's what they need to do. Okay, if that's what you need to do, then, you know, you have to respect that. I think what would put it in perspective is prior to World War II, dogs lived to 20 and cats to 30. And now I commonly hear people saying, well, my cat was quite old, lived to 15, had a very old, you know, lived to a ripe old age. We've lost that perspective that they actually should be living to 30, that that's more what their age should be, and their health. There was a very interesting study done by a man named Pottinger in feeding raw milk and pasteurized milk and condensed milk to cats, and the ones who were fed raw milk remained very healthy, and, you know, they had raw foods. They were very healthy and lived normal lives and produced healthy offspring, where the ones that were fed foods that had been heated or processed started having disease states and malformed litters if they could get pregnant at all. And their lifespan shortened tremendously. Disfigurements showed up, disease showed up. So it's really a little, you know, canary in the coal mine for us, isn't it?
Now, you mentioned that you have dogs and cats, so presumably they get on well together, but if you communicate with the cats, do they have a different sort of sense or expression than dogs, or are all animals generally communicating in the same way?
The methods are the same. I run into more, if I can say, pissy cats than I do pissy dogs. I've had instances where cats have not wanted to chat with me at all, where I never seem to run into that with dogs. It's usually the cats. I think it's also easier to come to an understanding with dogs than cats. And I'm only speaking from my experience. I think there are other communicators or intuitives out there who have different experiences and different relations. I always seem to end up with the cats that are the greatest challenge physically and emotionally.
They're very independent, I think.
Yes, yeah, I have one now. Well, I have three cats, and two of them were born under my deck, and I talk about that in the book. They're both quite compromised health-wise because they came in with a huge parasite load that had to be reconciled. And one of them in particular has bowel disease from it, bowel problems, and a compromised pancreas. She has diabetes. And she is determined to get to any food in the house, that it all belongs to her. and where we had a power outage here from the snowstorm the other day. The lights flickered on and off, which scared everybody. They were in the process of having dinner. Everyone went scattering, and my dogs are barking. And Sammy, this little brat, took it more as an opportunistic moment to steal everybody else's food. Yeah.
Oh, dear. They're not silly, are they?
No, they're quite smart.
Yes. Now, you deal with behavior problems.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of problems do dogs have apart from their owners?
You mean because of their owners, maybe? Actually, one of the biggest problems I run into is because of the owners, making them pack leaders. And ending up in a situation where they think their dog has separation anxiety when they've actually made the dog pack leader, and it's only the pack leader who should be leaving the home, not the subordinates. And so when your dog is pack leader and you go off to work, they are completely stressed by the situation. So it's reversing that, and I'm seeing much more of that issue over time, where we seem to be humanizing dogs and forgetting that they are actually dogs, that they have a language all their own. I think this is a tremendous disservice to dogs, tremendous, and so much misunderstanding, and dogs actually being put down because of our misunderstanding.
So how do you overcome these problems? Effectively, the dog is complaining to you, isn't it, and saying, I'm not being treated properly, or I'm unhappy. I mean, what makes a dog unhappy?
Well, in a circumstance like that, it's more what I'll get is the stress of the dog for, you know, within his language. They're not going to say, you know, I'm terribly unhappy with my situation and I really would like to move on. What I'll pick up is the stress of this person leaving the house, or, you know, how it's affecting them physically, and, you know, why it's happening. I pick up more than that, like images of the person walking out the door and them tearing apart the sofa because they don't know what else to do. So it's more a matter of retraining the human to understand why their dog is behaving like that, that it's the consequence of being made the pack leader by, you know, swooning over them and putting them up high when there's a problem with another dog, or feeding them first, or letting them just get away with murder. That, you know, they're sending a wrong message to the animal.
Right. So are any particular breeds of animals more easy to get on with people, or do they find it easier?
Labradors are the least amount of problems, the happiest that I've run across, the most sentimental stories I've ever heard from people, generally Labradors, if I had to choose. And I think there's a reason why they are the most popular breed in the world.
Yes. Now, tell our listeners how you came to meet the Bernese Mountain Dogs, and then eventually came onto your Newfoundlands.
Yes. I knew there had been a woman at the beach with this incredible Bernese Mountain Dog, and it had been a low point for me. I was sitting there actually having a flask of liquor and watching everybody else have lives and not feeling very in tune to anything, because I had walked away from everything that was me, everything that I did, and living a life that was not authentically my own. And here comes this woman who's just something very striking about her. You know, when somebody is so at peace with themselves and have this light that just shines through them, and she had it. And she comes towards me, and this dog just comes bounding over, sits in front of me for a minute saying, I am happy, and then bounds off, and it turns out his name was Happy.
Yes.
And he, I mean, it just struck me. It's one of those moments I'll never forget in my whole life. And so I went looking a while later for a Bernese Mountain Dog rescue, and went to this lovely home. This woman takes in dogs that have been abused and other things, and focuses mostly on Bernese Mountain Dogs. And knew when I saw the dog that it wasn't the right dog for me. But she and I had a chat and had tea and cookies. And she said the word Newfoundland dog in respect to them being much more aloof than Bernese. And it was like there was a big Las Vegas win in my head. It just, the word Newfoundland sent chills up and down my spine. And I knew that was the right breed for me. And it wasn't long after that that I found myself on my way to Oregon. I was living in California at the time, to go pick up my 7.5-week-old puppy, Sophie, my first Newfie.
Right. And thereby started a really happy relationship then. Now, time is flying by. We're not quite at the end of our 55 minutes, but I want to give you an opportunity to do your little advert. Now, where can people buy your book?
Anywhere. In the United States, you can order it from any bookstore, or you can go to Amazon.com, and Amazon also worldwide. It actually is going to be coming out in German next year. That's not quite happening yet, but by 2011, it'll be available in other languages. Amazon anywhere in the world. Also through my website, which is bathtubpsychic.com. I sell signed copies through there.
Right.
And, yeah.
And you, of course, if people are interested in looking you up, you have a second website.
I'm sorry? Well, no, it's actually the same website, BethAnnElliott.com.
Oh,
but people have trouble with, we added being able to get to it through Bathtub Psychic because people had trouble saying and spelling my name. So that's just made it quite simple. And
well, I had trouble pronouncing it.
Yeah. I'm quite accustomed to it. There also,
yeah.
Through there, you can get to my blog, which I've just updated the types of services I have. I've extended so that I can go international now with Skyping and doing email readings and that sort of thing. So it's much more involved.
Do you give out your email address if people want to contact you?
It's on the website. It's, again, it's BethAnn@BethAnnElliott.com. So for spelling's sake, it might just be easier to go to my website.
Now, why couldn't you have had an easy name like Doris
Betty
or something
Smith?
Like that?
No. It's one more thing I can complain to my mother about, I guess.
Right. Now, you're actually, I gather, in the course of writing a sequel to your first book. Is that very far away?
It's in the works. It's I should have it to the editor by the end of the summer. It's called We'll Talk to the Dead for Food.
Say that again.
We'll Talk to the Dead for Food.
We'll talk to the dead.
It's like you see the people by the side of the road with cardboard signs, "We'll work for food."
Yes.
Yes. Well, I will talk to the dead for food. It's a
play.
Oh,
I see.
Yes. Lost in translation, I suppose.
An interesting title.
Yes.
That should catch people's eye, I would think, that one.
I hope so.
I don't know if you do. Do you sell any products through your website?
No. No, I don't. Just my book. Well, yes and no. I am a distributor for Wendy Volhard's food, and I've worked for her as a nutrition consultant for years. And I do endorse her foods because it's basically taking her diet, her version of the raw diet, in a cold, dehydrated version where you only add meat and water. And so, yes, for that I represent, but I don't represent any other products. I'll talk to anybody about diet.
Right. Now, if someone is thinking, as a result of hearing you talk today, that they would like you to contact you and arrange a meeting about their pets, how would they approach that?
There is a list of the different kinds of consultations I do on my website. Like I said, it's just being updated. The new schedule is on my blog. And it's I do nutrition consultations and intuitive readings both. The nutrition is I do a phone or Skype consult on the dog if you're in a position of not knowing what to do next, you're having some problems and need guidance. And it goes all the way up to doing a complete rebalancing program where you've gone to a vet, you've had the full physical, you have to get blood work, and then I give you a stack of forms that you need to fill out. And then I take that work along with the blood work and everything else and put together a program for your dog.
Right.
Presumably,
it does help if you can meet the owner and their pet. But do you do your
work at
a distance?
I work better at a distance.
Oh, you do?
The physical is often interruptive to me. It really depends. There are times where I like to get of you, but I actually, maybe it's because I'm such an introvert. I just work better at an etheric level.
That's great. Bethann, I'm going to have to say thank you very much for coming onto the program. The time's gone so quickly. You're a very interesting talker, and there would have been a lot more to talk about, I'm sure. It's been very intriguing, so thank you very much again. I've got a few seconds left to say to my listeners that I'm not making an announcement about my guest for next week because it hasn't been confirmed. But you know that if you want to find out, you can get onto BBS Radio, and as soon as I know for certain, the information will be on there. So I'm sure you all enjoyed listening to my guest. I hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you very much.